Hello, Scorpio, and welcome to In These Times. In These Times. Kind of wild, huh? Beginning today at 2:24 p.m. on the 5th of September. This is the sixth reading in the sequence. I am up to the fixed signs, which I'm doing today. Moon's in Sagittarius, probably conjunct Jupiter right about now, almost about 6 degrees away. And I'm here to talk about some astrology for you. Scorpio sun and or rising and or moon. My readings tend to be very centered around the houses. So if you can, check out your rising sign. If you don't know it, we will look it up for you if you have even an approximate birth time. I'm beginning all these readings with a quote by Kenpo Carthar Rinpoche. I guess he goes by the name Carthar, and he's a Tibetan teacher. And normally I'm pretty spiritually refreshed, but boy, it has been challenging because the world is just full of wear and tear, and it seems like the people who want to do the mending or make the stitch in time to save nine are few and far between. Here is to you being one of them. Anyway, here's what Carthar says. As bad as times are, the Dharma is not affected or diminished in any way. We do indeed live in an age of decadence, but the Dharma is not decadent. The Dharma is the same as it's always been. The land of Tibet has suffered greatly through the preceding century, yet all that's happened there, all that has brought great suffering to the people, has greatly diminished practice resources, meaning spiritual resources, temples and things, has not affected the power or the authenticity of Dharma in any way. The compassion of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and their blessings are utterly unaffected by the circumstances of the times we live in. The Dharma has always been effective, and it will always work. You simply have to do it. You simply have to do it. So Dharma is acting as if to hold the world together. Dharma is the core teaching. We live in adharmic times, or what Carthar called decadent times, times of breakdown and decay. And I think he's being polite when he says that, because this is really a kind of full-on assault. It seems like whenever, you know, people in power have the chance to act as if to hold the world together, they seem to act as if to rip it apart. And we are here to create, and we're here to learn and love and grow, and as Abraham says, to be co-creators of the expanding universe. And your astrology is a kind of conspiracy to help you with that, and things I say are my observations, and they're my opinions. Try them on, see if they work. And let's go. I think that the two most influential energies coming into your chart right now are coming in through earth signs. Well, all three earth signs have a lot going on right now. Taurus, Virgo, and Capricorn. And we'll come back to Virgo. It too reaffirms a similar pattern. And it's this central pattern that I want to try to describe to you, a pattern that is about gathering and about community. The message is coming through everywhere. I'm looking at it coming in through your first house, your third house, your seventh house, and your 11th house. And that's just without thinking too hard. That's just glancing at a bunch of pencil marks I made on your chart this morning, which is included in the set. So the two really palpable things, the two things that are shakeups, really, are going on in Capricorn and Taurus, your opposite sign, and your third house, the all-important third house, because it's the house of how you express your words and your ideas. And it turns out that the expression of words and ideas is one of the most important things that makes us human, and one of the most important thing that defines our reality. No matter what, you know, what else you may do, the history of the modern world, by which I mean the past 500 years, is completely in the lock of the building up of literacy and then the breaking down of literacy. And so this impacts our relationships, our communities, our ability to commune on any level, and it's really influencing you. The big astrology that we're under right now is the conjunction of Saturn and Pluto in Capricorn. This is a long story. This has been brewing for a long time. It's been brewing for about 11 years, since early 2008, when Pluto first arrived in Capricorn and the world started to shake and quake again, particularly the structured financial world, the banks, the corporate world, went through a kind of a collapse. And this started a time of transformation for you, though it may not have been obvious what was going on. And what this, to me, describes is a change in your whole thought pattern. Every sign influences all of the other signs. And where you have Capricorn is on your third house, third place. So you start Scorpio, then Sag, then Cap. Count, 1, 2, 3, Capricorn, Pluto is there. Third house is one's mental process, relationship with siblings, relationship with neighbors, communication style, the whole approach to language, and you might say the message that you live out, the message that you teach with your existence. And it is fair to say that that your mentality, your mental approach to existence has been heavily influenced all the way up to dictated by your immediate ancestors, your immediate family. This is, of course, true of all of us. The book A General Theory of Love talks about how we're basically living in the neurological legacy of our own childhood. In terms of the imprinting that childhood experiences have on the developing brain of a child, because children continue to gestate for more than 2 years after they're born, because there's only so big that an infant's head can be, and so it gets to that limit and then is born so it can get out and then continues to grow. And humans have an exceptionally long phase of neurological development where even an 18-year-old brain is not really fully formed. But it's in those early years that the impressions are being made. And therefore, the terms of reality are being dictated by the people who surrounded us. This is the essence of your astrology. I'm going to say a lot of other things. It's all going to come back to this. And so you want to know this. I would highly recommend A General Theory of Love. It's only one book by that title. It came out around 2000, 2001. It's a beautifully poetic work. Though I don't remember this personally, some say that it advocates for mood-altering medication at some point. I put a big question mark next to that, and I found nothing biased in the book itself. Okay, so what you have happening now and what process is accelerating is a breakdown of this childhood neurology. Not everyone gets this. You are getting to experience it, and it is difficult. It might be painful. It might be changing your relationships to the people that you grew up with, including siblings and others. But it's happening, and it's happening very rapidly now. It's gone on for quite a while. You could trace elements of this story back to 08. You could trace certain elements back to 02 when a similar process happened. But you are going through a total revolution in the way that you think. And this is significant because Scorpio may be the most fixed of the fixed signs. It is helpful to have strong fixed energy because it means that you can persist, but it's challenging to have strong fixed energy because it's difficult to adapt and to make the changes in viewpoint that are necessary to be available to adapt to the changes of a changing environment. And so you are basically being kind of pushed out to the edge of a cliff on revising the way, the method that you think. And by that I mean not thinking like your parents set the example of teaching. This is challenging because many people cling to the past and they cling to their families, and nothing else seems familiar. Nothing else seems as legitimate. And it is challenging for most people to exceed the limits on thinking because, first of all, they tend to feel guilty about it. There is a lot of fear associated with being cast off from the tribe, which is a concern for you that in a way similar to what I'm describing has a way of dictating the terms of your reality and setting the limits on your happiness. So Pluto's been doing this work now for a decade, and then Saturn came along in 2017 and began the long process of its conjunction to Pluto. And this is the era that we are in now. We are in the era of the Saturn-Pluto conjunction. This is an era similar to the way that the 9/11 era was the Saturn-Pluto opposition, which took place in the summer of 2001 and then through 2002. So there was the 9/11 era. We call it that, but really it was the Saturn opposite Pluto era. Then we go back to the beginning of the 1980s, and it was the dawn of the Reagan Revolution, right? This was the whole thing going on, and everybody, all the boys started wearing ties like Jehovah's Witnesses, and the College Young Republicans were getting all this mystery money coming in from off campus, and everybody was going to be a conservative, and you tuck your chin and mumble the word conservative, and that was going to be the the new cool thing to be. That was the Saturn-Pluto conjunction in Libra. And so what happens is these conjunctions or oppositions occur, and society is kind of dragged through a gateway where it remains. You are, the way that this gateway is opening for you is in this very ordinary house of how you think and how you put your words together and the ideas that you live by. And this is also a map to how you conceive of your peers in your family and your neighbors and all of the people that you communicate with on a day-to-day level, not necessarily for work, but just maybe for shopping or let's go out bowling or whatever it might be, right? Ordinary things. So this revolution is happening there, and this is a big shakeup, and it may feel as if something really radical is changing, because it is. And this level of change is preparation for a whole other world that begins to emerge in late 2020 with the Jupiter-Saturn conjunction. Quicker planet first, slower planet second. Now, hold that thought. The corresponding outer reality to this kind of earthquake going on in your mind on a somewhat daily basis is taking place in your seventh house, Taurus. When you're born under a certain sign, or that sign is a reference point for the reading, as it is here, the opposite sign is an environmental description. So it describes relationships, partnerships, friendships, open enemies — that's a fun thing about the 12th house — and all of those with whom we come in one-to-one contact. So it's not so much about groups, though it can be, but really it's about the one-to-one contact that we have. And Uranus going through your relationship house is going to make your relationships feel kind of Uranian, which means rapidly transforming and potentially unstable. And so one of the things we can say about Scorpio, which is a fixed sign, which has Capricorn on the third house, is that you prefer things to be stable and fixed. You're not into change for its own sake. You're looking for something solid and stable and dependable. And what Uranus in the seventh is doing is indicating shakeups to your relationships. These can be mild shakeups, like your partner growing and changing, and you have the, you know, you meet the challenge in some way. You know you rise to the occasion. It can be radical shakeups, like things being revealed about your partnership. It can be changes that occur in the environment that have seemingly nothing to do with your relationship, or ships that provoke changes. And there can also be in really intense people spontaneously manifesting in your relationships. All of that is under the aegis of Uranus, a long-term and a new transit. This transit began in 18 and 19. It's going to last about five more years. And so you're in this world where the outer world seems to be consecrated with a new kind of shakeup or disruption energy. And now suddenly you're constantly having to adapt to this. Whereas you prefer your partners to be steadfast and stable, all of a sudden things might seem a little more fast and loose. This comes on the heels of other influences entering your seventh house. The most important of these was a few years ago, an influence called Albion, which I've called for 25 years before that, 1992 QB1, finally got a name. And Albion is brings the energy of the master teacher into your life. Seventh, again, is an entry portal where people come in. When with Albion there, the message is that there is some very deep teaching going on, and that people began, this is years before Uranus arrived, people began to offer you a deeper level of teaching, a deeper message, a deeper understanding of what your relationships are about. And this is subtle. It's not easy to see. And it requires thinking of your relationships differently. So it's kind of like a very gentle Pluto that does not force you to change or die, kind of like in the Pluto style, but rather to it's got more deer energy in that it lures you into the next level by a gentle kind of seduction. And if you're curious about this, there's a website I've got up at 1992QB1.com, 1992QB1.com, and will tell you my take on the history of this point and many of the points like it. So meanwhile, Uranus, big shakeup, seeming to come from the outside. Pluto in Capricorn, big shakeup from the inside. Which is it? Well, you may not necessarily be noticing the big shakeup from the inside. You may just be feeling like you're compelled to make new decisions, or you're compelled to get to the point where you have to change your mind, which is not that easy for you to do. But on one level, you just get to this place where you have no choice, where reality just manifests for you. And, you know, I mean, is anyone really like Donald Trump and his fake hurricane map, where he makes a mistake in a tweet and then he has to make a fake map to prove the mistake was true? Is anybody else that delusional? I mean, maybe, but it's not your karma. So when confronted with reality, you now have to accept it. And that might look like the reality is coming from the outside. What I'm just suggesting here is that nearly all of this energy, nearly all of this, the source of everything you're experiencing has an interior quality. We are talking, after all, about Pluto, the modern ruler of Scorpio, making its way through your deeply intimate third house. And so the place to keep returning is your interior reality, the space of your thoughts, the concepts that you live by, the principles that you believe define the world. Make that obvious to yourself. Make that plain. Strip away the veils and the window dressing and the cool, pretty concepts and the whatever else may be being pitched that day by the latest memes, and really ask yourself, what are the terms of your reality as you set them? Now, the common thread of the third and the seventh are that people get involved. And we're in this really weird time of people getting involved, because it seems like the more apps people download, the less they can deal with people. And the more they like things to hum along, like a little computer, in fact, being a little computer, and we're not that. And I think you're aware that there is a problem here, that the people are running and hiding from themselves, and that as a result, there's a big problem in our world right now. And one of the things that you are being called to do is to gather people to create a kind of a coalition. So by coalition, I don't just mean a bunch of people who all think the same thing. I mean more of a representative kind of coalition, of a, kind of a motley crew of people who are perhaps quite different and quite the same, and that you diversify your attractions to people and basically bring in everyone. So this is indicated a number of different ways. I can give you three examples. Building on the idea that that there's a thing in your mentality that is changing, and changing in a very radical way coming out of Capricorn. Right, so underneath it all, your psychic foundations are shifting. Now let's talk about some things going on that are more seemingly exterior. First of all, there's a very slow-moving, rarely used point called Apollon, A-P-O-L-L-O-N, Apollon, kind of a god of light, that is entering. It's in your sign now. It's at about 2 degrees. It's going to be there for decades. And this is a new influence for you. It's been in Libra forever. Now it finally changed signs, and it's becoming one of the defining concepts of who and what you are. And Apollon is about gathering. It's also about commerce. It's about sharing, trading, multiplication, expansion. And so this is a new way to think of yourself. So we are fully out of every man for himself territory. We're fully out of Machiavellian territory. We're fully out of all these capitalist concepts that are based on aggression and war, and you are becoming the teacher of gathering and of cooperation. That's right in Scorpio, right in your sign. It's the slowest moving, well, yeah, by far the slowest moving point currently in, and there's not a lot of slower moving ones that could even be there. Next, Uranus in your opposite house. That's about groups also. So here's another message of groups. And because Uranus is, it's most kind of palpable connection to Aquarius is the group connection. And so this is a kind of a magnet that brings other people into your life that opening a door, and one of the things with Uranus is it brings people in rather quickly, and it brings in some interesting, creative, weird, possibly a little bit disruptive types of people. So you want to pay attention to who's coming in, and what they do, and like what their agenda is. But Uranus again is a group influence. Then currently, we are experiencing something very unusual, which is a cluster in Virgo. Virgo is relevant to you because it's the 11th place from Scorpio. And it is related to Scorpio in some kind of subterranean ways. It's almost like Libra was built on top of one gigantic sign that spreads all the way from the beginning of Virgo to the end of Scorpio. And along the way, you pass through Libra and, you know, get redecorate and, you know, clean your car out. And in Virgo, which is your house of gathering, there's a special house designated as the gathering point, and that's Virgo. Right now, there's Mercury, Venus, Mars, the Sun, Juno, an asteroid about relationships, Sappho, an asteroid particularly about gathering, another point about gathering, this one taking place in the middle of a gathering. Huh. This is a theme here. And so this places you in the position of being an informal social leader, not a formal organizational leader. And even if you happen to be a formal organizational leader, like you manage the Chanel store in Vegas, or you're the regional sales manager of New York Life covering the entire West Coast. Hello. I just made that up. I don't think if it's you, please email me. Or if you're the Phoenix, Arizona police chief, and you have a formal leadership role, be aware that your true power comes from the informal level, that it is not your authority that people are going to be responding to, that it is your social ability. It is your ability to treat people like people, your ability to understand the human condition in every human and explore that and resonate with that. So let's talk a little bit about this gathering. It would seem as if the common theme is the theme of healing. This is one of the ways that you find yourself. By find yourself, I mean that house number six, the sixth place, has Aries on it for Scorpio. So for all things Scorpio, sun, moon, rising, or question related to Scorpio, the healing piece comes through Aries on the sixth. And so there's a strong tropism to discover who you are. And what has happened over the past year and a half is that Chiron has entered Aries. And, even when there's planets scattered throughout the chart like plum pudding, say a splash pattern, a splay pattern, something like this, Chiron is going to have a way of wrapping the wrapping attention around it. So it becomes a focal point and an area of concentrated learning, or you might say an organizing principle. And one of the most important things to bear in mind is that the organizing principle of your life right now is this healing process that you're under. And it is a healing process that, to me, involves coming out of isolation. Now, isolation has a number of different possible expressions. For example, there can be the isolation of being part in a very small tribe. There can be, for example, the isolation of always having everything orient around your family, or if not them physically, the way that they think, to the point where one does not notice it. And so the combination of forces that are bringing you into group awareness are also compelling you to be very strongly an individual, to be self-aware at all times. And in my take on your chart, to focus your healing process and to make yourself available to assist others. With all humility, without thinking that you can in any way heal, fix, or save them, the best you can do is to be helpful. And so if that's the theme that's emerging through, first of all, what looks to me like a kind of a psychic breakdown, a kind of a crunching down of the collected legacy of all of these generations of past thought. And by the way, not too many. Three generations. You want to really know about your grandparents and what they went through, and then your parents, and draw the lines through. That's what's getting crunched right now. That's what's getting broken down and needing to be carefully assessed. And once you've done that, or even well begun that, then there's something that is much deeper. The much deeper is that when you have successfully identified the kind of garbage thought patterns that people imposed on you, the things that they said were absolutely true and indelible that turned out to be neither true nor indelible, you can just kind of erase them like a mistake if you have are mindful enough. Once you have kind of crunched through all of that, something else is opening up, which is a very deep tap into collective wisdom. And this collective wisdom comes through your lineage, whatever lineage you consider that to be. Now, and now the idea of lineage could include your family line, your genetic family line, and all that's been passed down through it, or can go to another level entirely, which is the level of a bigger concept of the tribe, a level of species knowledge, a level of genetic knowledge, a level of deep insight into the human condition that is itself very old wisdom. But it's not possible to access very old wisdom when more recent bullshit is in the way. So there, you know, nothing gets in the way of old wisdom like lies your parents told you about the nature of your reality. First, you would have to figure out that those are not true, that there's just something not true about all that. You know it's not true because maybe you don't feel that good when you think of these things, or you realize that you have been kind of built into a mental prison by people who you kind of like and, you know, don't want to think poorly of. But they gave you your reality. They're the ones who set the limits of your of your reality. And so it's necessary to be highly objective when going through these teachings. And this involves a level of bravery. It involves scrupulous honesty with yourself. And it involves, I think, in particular, overcoming the guilt trip that family legacy lays on us. You know, how could you dare to not think like we think? And so with this may come confronting a kind of a fear of heresy, right? Of being told, the fear of being told that you're not welcome. And so this is a very deep one. I mean, Melanie Reinhart writes about this as being one of the most important shadow sides of Aquarius. And where you have Aquarius in your chart, and which is about to become mightily illuminated by a conjunction in late 2020, is in the house of security, fourth house. Fourth house is the house where you make the decision about what makes you feel safe, whether you feel safe, what it takes, why not, or just kind of experience it as a reflex. And Aquarius has the fear of being cast off. Part of that, by the way, I think is at the root of your concerns that you will not be accepted socially unless you're perfect. So it has a secondary shadow manifestation that translates from the pressure of the family to be acceptable to them, and then that's something that you may well have taken on and introjected, the opposite of projected, introjected, equally illusory, but still can be menacing. And having Virgo as your 11th sign, your 11th place, 11th house, 11th solar house, however you want to think of it, the 11th zone, you tend to be very demanding towards yourself in terms of your what makes you socially acceptable. This is potentially quite neurotic and must be transcended. There has to be a level of self-acceptance and self-comfort that you have, and that self-comfort has to include the fact that no one's a perfect person. Everyone makes mistakes. Everyone's got their little things and their hang-ups and things that irritate them about people and about themselves and all of this stuff, and that perfection is not it's not valid. It's not a value. Nor is the fear of rejection as a motivation for being a more supposedly perfect person. That too is infuriating to have to live like that. And I'm proposing that there are numerous factors that are suggesting that you have ways to set yourself free from these particular thought forms, and that the result on the other end is a transformation in your inner thought process. I mean, never forget that this is all about your inner thought process right now. All of this Pluto and Capricorn, Saturn, Pluto and Capricorn, and then certain other new factors that have come into Capricorn, particularly Pholus and Quasar, which take you way into the possibility of deep wisdom tradition. Once you've cleared away all the jetsam and flotsam, I mean, imagine, you know, it's a little like, imagine that you inherit the family homestead, and it's kind of some ramshackle buildings, and then one day you're, you know, putting in a new, you know, you're digging a ditch for drainage, you know, to put a pipe in or something, and you start to come across artifacts of the ancient past. And you figure out that you can tear down all these buildings and find that there is an archaeological site below them from which you can extract knowledge from a whole other place and time. So I don't know how cosmic this sounds, but I think that we all understand the idea that there is body wisdom. I think we understand the idea that that you know, phony pseudo religious teachings completely obscure the nature of the deeper, truer teachings. I mean, for example, I began with a quote from a book about Bardo, which is the interval between lifetimes. And there's a lot documented about Bardo, a lot known and understood about it. And if you read it, you might note that it sounds kind of familiar, that there's something here that makes sense, that fills in a lot of gaps. But the religious version of the story, when the Christians kind of take it out of the Far East and bring it into the like Near East and translate it into their kind of horrendous desert religion, ends up being translated into heaven, hell, good person goes to heaven, bad person goes to hell, and it's this cartoon version of what in reality is a very sublime process of transitioning from one incarnation into the next incarnation. And so it's on that level, it's on the level of identifying the obstacles to understanding, the obstacles to teaching, the obstacles to learning, the obstacles to communicating in true language, and having addressed those, suddenly discovering that there's this very deep wisdom that you have available to you, and that it is sensible at this point in your life to have healing yourself, which really means feeling better, accepting who you are, and engaging in a conscious process of growth as the first thing that you think about when you get up every morning and the last thing you think about when you go to bed every night. Now, I promised that there would be a one thought about sexuality in every one of these readings. And One of the things you probably know about Scorpio is that it's, you know, considered the, like, spookiest sign of the zodiac because it addresses matters of sex and death. And so people can, like, not believe in astrology, but then they've, like, heard of Scorpio. Oh, my God, Scorpio. And it's kind of a joke. And it's kind of one of those true jokes. And the truth is that you contain a level of, let's just say, existential potency that many of the muggles roaming around the planet among us don't get. They don't connect with. And you do. You have this innate connection to the existential world, and there's something about you that is, you have an intuitive understanding of sexuality and also of the power expressible through sexuality. And one of the things that the healing process of Chiron in Aries is getting at is suggesting that an essential element of your healing process is a sexual healing process. Now, we certainly see where there is plenty of discussion of injury, pain, rage, anger, all the bad things that have happened, the statistics we can all shock ourselves with of how many people have been abused, and you think, oh, this is only women. Then you read the statistics about men, and you find out that almost as many men have had the experience and maybe have had some really negative sexual experience. Then you can look at even through a wider filter and realize that everyone who comes up through, you know, Abrahamic religion, you know, Jewish, Christian, Muslim religion, is abused on a philosophical level, if not a physical level, because this is all going on. So we've got some description of the problem. It's still not a description that lends itself easily to a solution. And one of the things I'm keen on observing is whether a problem is stated in a way that it can be solved. And so one of the things that the Chiron is calling on you to do, and in a sense everything about your astrology is calling on you to do, but in particular Chiron in Aries is calling on you to do, is to define all of your healing problems, agendas, but let's say problems, in a way that they can be solved. And if you are describing a problem in a way that you can't solve it, one of two things are possible. It may not be a problem, or you may have defined it in a way that's completely incorrect. And so I would suggest that when you describe a healing agenda or a problem of any kind, that you ask yourself if there's a solution to this. And if you are if you have in any way experienced a sexual injury that has harmed your trust in people. People might mean men. People might mean women. People might mean anything you define as people in human terms, that you initially invest energy in how you describe the problem. And you might start to notice that there's a lot of describing problems in ways that can't be solved. And that's not helping anyone. And so you remain in the role of teacher, and you remain in the role of exemplar, and you remain in the role of person who's got a really, really powerful sexual charge that you carry around, and you might think that this is dangerous. You might think that this is in some way negative. There's a lot of possibilities for how you might think about this. But you remain a teacher. And you remain someone who is looked to as a kind of an authority. And I would suggest, again, that you bring that authority down to the level of peer-to-peer authority and that you focus your own process and let your contact with others come from that. And so as you define your own problems and situations in a way that can be solved, first of all, you may become interested in solving them. And second, you may become increasingly disinterested in those who define their problems in ways that cannot be solved, that use them as games or pastimes to prevent intimacy, that use them as weapons or cudgels in some way. There's this a big thing going on right now where people are using their sense of their own injury as a weapon or cudgel against others. It's a very unhealthy pattern. Carolyn Mace called it woundology in her early work, and I think this is a very necessary tool to understand what this is and to commit to the things that have in any way hampered or harmed you becoming tools for your own personal healing, and then by extension, the people around you. That's what I have to say to you on this day. That is my take on the astrology of archetypal Scorpio, the deep and intriguing sign of the zodiac. All right. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you for listening. And please do check out your rising sign if you have access or opportunity to do that. And we'll catch you fairly soon with your birthday reading for 2020 and your annual reading for 2020 as well. All right. Once again, good to be with you. And bye for now.